Greetings, Darklings. Welcome to another Vampire Book Club episode.
Yay.
Today we're going to be talking about The Lost Girls, a vampire YA novel by Sonia Hartle. Hartle has written both adult and young adult books. The Lost Girls is her third YA novel. The Lost Girls was published September 14th, 2021. So it's pretty fresh.
Yeah, it's pretty recent.
I purchased the hardback book, which runs 250 pages.
And I bought it for Kindle, and it was about the same amount of pages. And I don't have enough bookshelves for the books I already own, so I'm trying very hard not to buy a lot of physical books.
Thankfully, I'm passing this one along.
Yeah, that helps for sure. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to give a short summary of the plot. We're not going to go into a lot of detail, but just give you an idea of the story of the book.
Spoiler alerts.
Yeah, there is spoilers. We are going to go through all the way to the end of the book. And obviously, as we discuss the book, we're going to discuss how it ends as well. So be warned. So Holly is a vampire who's working at Taco Bell and living in a rundown motel when she meets Ida and Rose, who are vampires that were turned by the same vampire who turned her. That vampire is Elton, a boy who claimed she was his first love and whom she lived with for over 30 years. Because vampires have to remain in close proximity to their makers, and because Elton has found a new object of his affections, a girl named Parker, whom he intends to turn, Rose and Ida want to kill him before he can do it.
Holly moves in with Rose and Ida and finally agrees to help kill Elton after they all go to the high school and she meets Parker, whom she relates to. She also sees Elton there, and he's a little prick.
Mm-hmm.
Ida, meanwhile, talks to Frankie, one of Elton's goons who has a crush on her, and tears off his arms to get him to talk. They learn that to kill him, they need to burn all of their heirlooms, the objects that allowed them to keep their humanity when turned into vampires, under the full moon at the school. The next full moon is 3 weeks away.
So Holly admits to the others that she doesn't even have her heirloom anymore. It was a locket, and it was taken by her best friend Stacy after she made Stacy into a vampire to save her life. Stacy had almost died trying to stake Elton, who tore open her throat, and now she has to live with the gash because vampires don't heal from wounds that they had when they were human. So if you're turned with a giant wound, that wound is forever.
Mm.
The three of them also soon learn that destroying their heirlooms will rid them of any memories of their mortal lives. And to complicate matters, Ida's heirloom was buried with her sister, and Rose's heirloom is in a bank vault, and they won't believe that it's her vault because she looks too young, it was opened years ago, and she doesn't even have any ID because back when she opened the vault in the 1950s, you didn't need ID to open an account at a bank.
Everybody knew everybody. Aw. Holly confronts Stacy, who has become Lilith, a vampire to the local goth crowd who also hang out at her mom's old house, which she's outfitted like a set from a vampire movie. Stacy claims she threw the locket away in New Orleans 30 years ago, but Holly thinks she's lying. Meanwhile, she finds Parker drunk in a park and takes her home to sleep it off. The next day, she learns Parker's mother wants to move to Tennessee, and Elton has told Parker she can move in with him.
So they work on getting their heirlooms, although Elton tries to stop them along with his cronies at Ida's sister's grave. And then, in a rage, Elton destroys their apartment because he's an asshole and he's mad that they're doing things he doesn't like. So they basically ransack and ruin their apartment. So they move into Stacy's house to lay low. Elton uses Gwen, one of his cronies, to try and thwart their attempts at the bank, although Frankie, his other crony, agrees to help them with that one. And they get Rose's combs, which are her heirloom. Parker confronts Holly with her yearbook from 1987 at their apartment, and she knows that Holly is a vampire, along with Elton. She has figured this out. She actually figures it out pretty quickly, but is afraid to actually say it, and then finally mm-hmm. confronts Holly and is like, what's going on? They make out and then sleep together, but Elton shows up, so Holly ushers her out, and Elton learns that Holly still has her locket, which he thought she lost. So now he's a little panicked because he realizes she actually has her heirloom.
With all the items and magical ingredients they need for the ritual to burn the heirlooms, Rose, Ida, and Holly try to bide their time until the full moon. They agree to meet Frankie, who tells them he'll get Elton to the site at midnight after they burn the heirlooms, which they tell him they'll do at 11 p.m. Parker comes to the house and wants to be a vampire with Holly, but Holly wants her to live her mortal life instead of being stuck as a teenager forever. Elton has explained the process to her, so Parker gives Holly the bracelet she was going to use as her heirloom and begs her to burn it with the others.
Then on the night of the full moon, they go to the school parking lot and burn the heirlooms at 10 p.m., an hour earlier than they told Frankie. Which is good, because Elton shows up with his cronies at 10:30, and they realize that Frankie betrayed them. Elton and his group have actually dug four graves with coffins that they're going to put all of the girls in, so Rose, Ida, Holly, and Stacy, and basically leave them there to starve and go mad. Oh, and they can't kill Elton because they need all of the heirlooms from all the girls he turned. And he reveals that he's turned Parker, and he's hidden her heirloom so they can't get it.
So a fight ensues, and Parker helps Elton put Rose in a coffin. But as Holly attacks Elton, she realizes he's not healing. He's confused. She realizes Parker somehow made the bracelet an heirloom after all, and now Elton is killable. She kills him successfully and then convinces Frankie, and somewhat Gwen, that she learned a way to kill vampires without burning the heirlooms of their fledglings. So those two flee.
Mm-hmm. And then Holly and Parker dig up Rose, Stacy, and Ida. Despite not having memories of their mortal past, Parker wrote a letter to herself about what was happening, so she knew to trust Holly and not Elton. And they still have their vampire memories. They get in the van and drive away, leaving the town of Glen River behind because they no longer have to be where their maker is. Yay.
Except Stacy.
Well, Stacy does, but Stacy and Holly have an agreement that they will discuss where they go. And if one of them needs to go somewhere, maybe they will make the trip together or whatever.
Absolutely. Plus they're best friends now. Yay.
The power of friendship.
That was the lesson that we learned along the way.
So that's a pretty quick summary of the whole book.
Right. So we'll go into all the characters. We first have Holly Little. She's our protagonist and narrator. When we first meet her, she's slinging tacos at the late night shift at the graveyard shift of Taco Bell, which is, I think, almost exclusively a drive-through situation.
No, there's a restaurant inside. She talks about how people throw up in there sometimes and she has to clean it. And
oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. I thought like, oh, we stopped doing it or something. But you're right.
And Holly was turned in 1987 at the age of 16. So she is about 50 when this story takes place. Although in this world, vampires don't age mentally either. So they are stuck as perpetual teenagers, which has to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. And because Holly really didn't learn any adult skills, I guess you could say, like life skills, before she was turned, she has to rely on what she knows, which wasn't a whole lot. Like, I can sling tacos. I have no work history. I don't know how to sign a lease for an apartment. You know, she doesn't know any of these things. So she's living isn't she living more in a long-term motel sort of situation?
Yeah, she's living in a seedy motel, and I think she's paying weekly or something.
Yeah. So when we meet her, it's been 3 months since Elton left her, and very cruelly left her. And so she's surviving. Mm-hmm. We'll say that she's surviving. She also has a code when it comes to killing humans, where she gives them 2 seconds to run. And if they choose to run, she lets them go. But if they don't, she will eat them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of her code?
I think as a vampire, you have to come up with a system that works for you. Mm-hmm. If that is killing evildoers exclusively, if that is killing whoever's unfortunate enough to cross your path, whatever, if that is giving people a chance to back away and run, I mean, whatever works so that you can live with yourself into eternity. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I say, devise a system and stick with it. And that's what she's doing. So good for her. So Ida is Elton's first fledgling, and her family owned a general store in Glen River. Ida was closest to her little sister, Bea, who died right after Ida was turned. Ida is tough, sassy, and she likes to use body parts and some creative craft work. So she's always taking body parts from victims and bringing them home and putting sealant on them so they don't rot and turning them into bird houses and lamps and things. I guess you have to have hobbies.
Yeah. Did Bea die before or after Ida?
After.
Oh, okay. She died of like the flu? Spanish flu? No.
It was like pneumonia.
Pneumonia. Yeah.
Yeah. She died like shortly after.
And Ida, we learn, was Ida and Elton knew each other as humans.
Yes. So she knows that Elton is not some like ancient supernatural phenomenon. Like she knew mm-hmm. him as a person, which I think helps take a little of the wind out of his sails too. And she can like kind of tell that to the others and be like, he hasn't been around for eons or anything. He's just some guy I knew.
Yeah. And I think like her family disapproved of the match, and he was engaged to another woman or another young woman named Amelia, whose family was attacked by a vampire and killed everyone but turned Amelia. And then Amelia, in rage of Ida, you know, quote unquote, stealing Elton, turned Elton into a vampire. Mm-hmm. And the reason why Elton can also go anywhere is because they realize that he must have killed Amelia.
Yeah. And Ida even says at one point there was a fire at her house and everyone died, and she kind of suspects that maybe Amelia killed her own family.
Yeah.
So she doesn't sound like she was a super great person. And Ida was also engaged to someone else, I think. And so I think Elton, for her, just represented a chance to, like, get out of that situation. We'll learn later that Ida's probably asexual and mm-hmm. is not that into people. So I think maybe he was just sort of her other option than this dude her family wanted her to be with. And so that felt better.
I love Ida.
I do, too. I think she's great. She's, like, creepy, full-on vampire, and I dig it.
Yeah. So then we have Rose. Petite and deadly, Rose was turned into a vampire at the age of 18 in 1954. She likes retro rockabilly dresses and stress cleaning. At the time of her turning, had realized that she wanted to live more for herself than what her parents wanted. Her parents wanted her to just be like the quintessential housewife and were very much grooming her to be like the perfect, you know, 1950s woman. And she was beginning to realize that she wanted more for herself during that time, which is kind of made like the perfect recipe for Elton then to swoop in and love bomb her and kind of carry her away, you know, like mm-hmm. promising her freedom and choices that were just unavailable to her as a young woman in the 50s. So when we meet her, she just really wants to live for herself.
Mm-hmm.
I love her stress cleaning.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Didn't she want to go to nursing school or something too, I think? Was that her? I don't know.
I don't recall.
Stacy is Holly's best friend from her youth as a mortal who was turned under horrific circumstances because she tried to kill Elton to save Holly, and Elton just like ripped her throat out, kind of, or like mm-hmm. tore her throat open. Mm-hmm. And so in order to save her, Holly turned her into a vampire, not realizing that her throat would always have that horrible gash. So she often wears turtlenecks or scarves to hide it.
I really love Stacy. I think I relate to her the most because I feel like I would have been Stacy. I would have, first of all, I would have felt so abandoned by my friend for like, you know, ditching me for some, you know, boy who's like love bombing her and then trying to seclude her away from, you know, the person who loves her the most and knows her the most, which is her best friend. And I would absolutely go at him like with a stake and, you know, but would I be then? Yeah, I guess I would. I would be really angry if like I woke up as a vampire and my friend was gone, you know, and I'd probably snatch the locket as well. Cause like, I know she snatches the locket and runs like hell. I don't know that I would nurse a like 30-year grudge though, you know, but I mean, if my friend is under the constant control of that fuckboy vampire, I absolutely would, you know, I'd just be sort of like waiting for him to slip up somehow, and but then I would go and try and reconcile with my friend. But I could be Holly too. That's the thing. I feel like, you know, as a teenager, I could have been Holly as well. It's very like Miyaka and Yui.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's a very Miyaka Yui situation. And for those of you who are way too young or just not nerdy enough for this, this is like an anime reference to an anime called Fushigi Yugi that Tori and I both very much adore.
Yes.
And it has these best friends who've been best friends since kindergarten, and a wedge gets driven between them. And there are people who are manipulating that and like exacerbating, like making them keep apart, basically, and turning them into enemies, like active nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Holly and Stacy as a very light version of that.
Yeah, and totally. Well, Elton doesn't want Holly to have any kind of support system or friends. No. So he obviously doesn't want them to be anywhere near each other. So he's happy to foster that divide as much as possible.
Exactly. But they do reconcile in this story, and that makes me very, very happy.
Yeah. I also love that Stacy is just like dressing all goth and getting the goth kids to be like her vampire, like little vampire-et cult. Like they all want to be vampires. And so they like follow her around and hang out at her house. And she decorates her house like you would expect a vampire's house to look. And I just think it's really funny. And that's probably what I would do in her situation.
Like, yeah.
I just think that's a good way to have people around you all the time.
And hide in plain sight.
Yeah, because no one's really going to believe you're a real vampire. So they just think you're a cooler, older goth kid who's like letting everyone hang at your house and drink beer or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just like, I don't give a shit. She does pick off them, which is not great to really shit where you eat like that, but.
I have some thoughts on the killing in this, which we can get to.
We'll get to that. I do too.
So I'm gonna put a little note here, because every time I say we'll get to that, I always forget to freaking mention it. So we're gonna have killing.
So then we have Parker, Elton's latest girlfriend, a loner whose mom is more interested in boyfriends than her own daughter. Parker and Holly have an instant connection. I like Parker. I think she could have been fleshed out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But her and Holly have stuff in common, especially like in their relationships with their mothers, because Holly's mother was very preoccupied with men, especially married men, when Holly was alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then we have Elton, the fuckboy antagonist of the book, a love bomb him, control him, and leave him vampire who gets his rocks off by being a narcissist. He's terrible.
Yeah, he's kind of the worst.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have any redeeming qualities at all.
He has no redeeming qualities. Anything we know about him before he was made a vampire comes from Ida, who's obviously, like, has very, I would say, a biased opinion. And
sure.
Like, which is fair to say. Like, you know, fair play to her. But even Elton wouldn't know anything about Elton, because clearly he was able to kill Amelia, his maker. So he doesn't even remember what he was like.
That's true. That's actually a good point.
Yeah. So he wouldn't remember at all life before being a vampire, which is interesting, because when you think about it, because when you're like, okay, so when you burn the heirlooms in, it almost sounds like, okay, I am this person. And that just means to me that Elton was always an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, I think we get that impression.
Yeah.
I think he was
not
always
just Ida. Like, it's like he must have just always been, had like this desire for control.
Yeah. Oh, I think so.
Yeah. It's not something that happened for a reason. It just was always there. And then I think when he became a vampire, he had the means then to really bring out the worst in himself.
Yeah, there's a great line in Coldest Girl in Cold Town, which we need to read. That's a super good vampire YA book. Like, it's so good. But there's a line about how being a vampire just makes you more of what you were. Like, it's just you distilled.
Yes.
And I think that is true in this world as well.
I think that's very true in this world. Yes, I was trying to figure out a good way to say that. And that is an excellent line.
Mm-hmm. Holly Black. She's very good.
Oh, that's Holly Black. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a good book. I really love it. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in a future episode.
I wouldn't actually be surprised if Sonya named Holly after Holly Black. I wonder.
I don't know.
That'd be interesting. I actually want to ask her that. I might just tweet at her.
And then finally, we have Gwen and Frankie. These are Elton's cronies. Gwen is a sadist from the 1970s with a demonic Farrah Fawcett look, who clearly killed her maker because she can go wherever she wants. So she is free from that burden. And Frankie is or was her boyfriend. It's not clear. And he doesn't seem to like her or Elton all that much. So I don't know. But he is her fledgling. So he does kind of have to go where she goes. He's lumbering and kind of passive, and he has a giant crush on Ida, who is definitely not into him and who has told him that she is not into him, but still uses that connection to try and get some information.
Yeah. So now we have themes and tropes that are found within the novel. Coming of age. So I would argue that this is a coming of age story, even though the characters, well, the vampires can no longer age, especially in like allegedly maturity. But I think having them stuck in teenaged emotional and psychological stasis is interesting, but difficult to successfully pull off. My evidence, though, for being this a coming of age story is the fact that the vampires learn to put the past behind them and say goodbye to the ghosts of their mortality so they could live richer lives as vampires and destroy the cycle of abuse that Elton kept them in.
Yeah, totally. I don't think you actually have to actually age to have a coming of age story. So I think that works.
Right. So then we have healing from trauma. Holly, Ida, and Rose are all in various stages of trauma recovery from decades of Elton's abuse and control. I mean, obviously, like, you know, we here at Vampires Ruined Our Lives do not condone murder.
Nope.
Just putting that out there. But, you know, this is a work of fiction. And part of the healing process for them is, you know, murder. I mean, murdering Elton, not their victims, which they feed off of. But and I feel it's, you know, it's a cathartic process. And I think that because each of them are in different stages, it's really they're all unique. Like they're all uniquely handling it, you know, because like Ida and Rose are very like factual about it. Like they're not really emotional anymore about the fact that Elton left them. And, you know, do they still have lingering feelings for him? Not really. You know, like they just don't. Whereas Holly is still struggles a little, you know, like, you know, she sees him. And initially, you know, she remembers like that lurch of attraction and the allure of him, you know, like his charismatic presence. So she's still fighting that. But the other girls are just like, get the fuck out of here, you know?
Yeah, well, for her, it's pretty recent.
Yeah, too, right, because it's fresh. Right, exactly.
And so she is still kind of accepting that she can have a life without him and doesn't need him and kind of working her way into that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Ida and Rose have been living without him for a long time, would love to just not have to trail around after him everywhere he goes because they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think any feelings they might have had for him are long gone. So that's not really a problem.
Yeah. So I thought it was very clever to have these three young women in the various stages of healing from the trauma.
Sure.
So whereas, you know, we still see Rose being, and I think she's just more of a, she's very practical, but she's also more emotional than Ida.
Yes. Oh, much more. Ida is very sarcastic and kind of mean. I love it.
Yeah, Rose is like the most pragmatic out of all of them. You know, she's a very like, well, I'll just roll up my sleeves and, you know, we'll get it done, you know, sort of person. Very type A personality.
Yes.
Whereas Ida's just like, light a match, burn it down.
Yep.
And she's not unfeeling by any means. She's, you know, she's actually a very compelling character. But and especially like as we learn more about her past and especially her love for her little sister and saying goodbye to her sister for the final time, you know, was very difficult for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
And speaking of which, sisterhood and found family. So I added found family to this as a subsection because I think by the end of the gang is on their way to becoming a found family. there's definitely a sisterhood or sisters are doing it for themselves, you know, kind of theme, like these past victims of Elton's misogynistic, narcissistic abuse teaming up to take him down before he can continue his ritualistic bullshit. It's charming, and I like that there are new friends as well as patching up old friendships, like between Stacy and Holly, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I almost thought that Stacy was going to turn out to be bad, and I would have been heartbroken. I will say that, but she didn't. So yay, best friends for life.
Yeah, I was waiting for her to betray them. Like every minute, I was just waiting for something to happen and her to just turn around and betray them. So that was kind of cool that she did not. I think you could argue that they kind of are a found family before the end, because they do kind of live together and come together and seem to really like each other. And they don't even talk so much about like when it's over, they're all going to go their separate ways or anything. Like they're all pretty much, they don't say it yet, but you get the feeling that they are all planning to like stick together for a while. So. That's cool. And then obviously this book has some queerness, which is good. Always a fan of that. It does kind of embrace the whole like most vampires are basically queer because like if you live a long time, you get over your mortal hangups. Although they do in this world have sex and sexual preferences. So not every vampire is queer. I would argue Elton is probably straight. I don't know for sure. But we do learn that Holly is bi and Ida is ace, which I'm always happy to see more ace rep. I feel like that's something that is sorely needed. So I'm always excited for that.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And also that it is not a capital big deal either. Mm-hmm. Like the story features queer characters because they are inherently queer. It isn't a source of plot or angst or drama. It just is, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
You know, there's no like, I'm having this inner turmoil. You know, and I'm like, it doesn't always need to be about that.
Yeah, know? It doesn't, for sure. It gets very old if all the queer stories are like, I'm struggling.
Except
that I like someone of the same gender. And it's like, okay, like, it's fine. I mean, this, not that that struggle isn't real, but like, it doesn't always have to be part of the story.
It just doesn't always have to be part of the story, right? And for fact, it can detract if that's not what your story is about.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the killing in the series, which is very much an afterthought, and it's not a plot point. It is not a source of angst. And it's actually very, like, almost kind of dangerously lazy the way that they kill and just, like, drop bodies.
It's very, I had the word in my head. Hold on. Impartial.
Yeah, well, it's like a necessary thing, which is great. And I will say that I really appreciate that this is a vampire story and it's a young adult vampire story where killing is not angsty. Like there's no moral, like, oh my gosh, I'm horrible for taking human life. Like that's not even, it does not factor in really. Like Holly mentions her system helping her sleep at night, but like that's it. And I love that because I feel like a lot of vampire stories get hung up on the morality of being a vampire. And it's like, there are plenty of stories about that already. Not every vampire story has to be like, oh, but I must kill to survive. It's like, okay, we get it. You can do other things. Let's move on. But the way that they kill and just like leave bodies, like she kills her boss at Taco Bell and leaves him in the chair. And I guess they just think animals attacked him. They, when they're staying at Stacy's house, they leave them in the forest behind her mom's house. And like, Stacy's like, don't leave them too close to the fence. But like, they just leave them out there so animals will get them. They dump bodies in the dumpster in the alley next to their apartment. Just stuff like that. It's just very like.
Oh, Rose brings her kills home.
Rose brings her kills home and sometimes kills them in her bedroom. Like some of it is very like, if you're thinking about this from a don't get caught perspective, they are not doing very well.
Right.
Because they are leaving a big trail. But I do appreciate the fact that it's not like this huge deal. Like, oh, you're killing people. Oh my gosh, pearl clutching. Like, it's not even a problem. It's like, we're vampires. We kill. So what? And I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very like, it just like the queer kind of thing. It's like, it doesn't need to be this huge angsty plot point.
No, it's just how it is. Vampires kill.
Yep.
And these vampires are definitely allowed to be otherworldly and vampiric, which is another thing I appreciate. Like, they have humanity, but they're definitely allowed to be monsters. Like,
yeah.
Ida's, like, doing her little human body part crafts, and, like, it's fine. So I kind of dig it for that.
That's a great segue into our vampire lore.
Yep, vampire lore. So the first thing about these vampires is they can be in the sun. No, it's just, this is my least favorite vampire thing. Like, I think either it has to be earned or you have to like slather on sunscreen like Deacon Frost, or like, I feel like there has to be, like, I don't like vampire lore where, oh, we can go on the day. It's freaking fine. Like, I don't know. It's my least favorite thing. Like, it's fine for the story. I get that it's needed for the plot, because the plot is that Elton goes to high school, which they do mock. Like, Holly does say, like, I don't know why you would want to spend eternity there. And again, I don't either. So I guess it's an easy place to pick up vulnerable girls.
Yeah, I think that's where it's just his hunting ground.
Yeah, but I just love my son fearing vampires, okay? I love that. I'm not a fan of vampire lore where they can be in the sun.
Yeah, I was wondering how you would take this one. I'm a little torn on it because while I'm more forgiving about vampires who can be in the sun, I know the plot relies heavily on the vampires being able to, like, enter the school, like, during school hours.
Yeah.
And I feel like questioning that in a way, like, if the fundamentals of vampire tropes need to be altered or erased in order for the plot to work, is that an indication of a weak plot, or should vampire tropes be that malleable because they are, you know, fiction? I don't have an answer. And I recognize I have my own bias here, so I'm not calling the plot or the author weak. It's just something I personally have a hard time adapting to. But I do think in the end, Sonia blended it a lot better than other authors have. Like, it didn't take place exclusively at the school. Holly mocked it, you know? Holly kind of just sort of like wondered. They didn't like sit in through every single class and pretended to legitimately be students like day in, day out. It was more just like checking out Parker, seeing like where Alton, Frankie, and Gwen are. You know what I mean? It was more like reconnaissance.
Yeah, and I don't think that vampire rules have to be set in stone. I mean, if you go to the TV tropes page, there's a whole page for our vampires are different.
Yeah, right.
Like, obviously, you play around with the vampire lore. I just personally like my vampires to fear the sun.
Right.
That's just how I roll.
Yeah. And I did think Holly, I don't know if the word is reconciling, but meeting up with her former English teacher who recognized her as a vampire. Like, he instantly knew who she was.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, of course he did. He's not that old.
Yeah, he's not that old.
He's, like, maybe in his 60s. And he's like, I know, you were in my class. Like, I'm not an idiot. I know exactly who you are. Like, come on. And I thought that was good.
Yeah. And how she realized that, because she was like, oh my God, this man is a shadow of who he was. He used to jump on the desk and throw candy at us for, like, you know, he was, like, that young and very energetic, zeal for life kind of teacher, you know, like really striving to be like teacher of the year, you know, kind of guy, like made learning fun. And now, you know, he's like close to retirement, you know, so he's just, you know, he's a little bit more cynical as one becomes in a certain profession. And then she realizes, like, by her second meeting with him, which is the final one, that, like, one does not have to, like, basically, like, wear capes to be a hero, you know, like, just showing up and doing the work and, you know, is good enough. I don't know. I thought that was, as somebody who was like friends with like her teachers in that way and like really looked up to certain ones, I felt that sort of like D plot, you know, going on to be very sweet.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah. So vampires do not mature past their age of dying. So as I stated earlier, I think this is an interesting challenge for authors to make for themselves, but not necessarily easy to pull off. It really depends on the characters themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense in a YA novel, right? Because if you're going to have a YA novel about a vampire who's 50 years old, that's a hard sell, unless she's mentally and emotionally 16. I'm going to guess that was like an editorial thing. Like, I mean, not that the author didn't come up with it, but I'm going to say like an editor would have been like, no, she needs to be a teenager.
Right, right.
So I think that's probably drove that more than anything else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's harder when they're younger.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because I know, like, the books that I love the most, the vampire books that I love, are a children's series. And there's two characters in particular, they're both boys who are easy for the author to keep, you know, in stasis. You have one, Rudolph, who was turned like around 10, and he's easy to kind of keep as like this bratty and self-centered, you know, 10-year-old, easy to keep his brother slash cousin, because he's a cousin in the German version, a, you know, aloof kind of moody teenager. But it was very, very difficult for her to keep Anna, Rudolph's younger sister, perpetually like 8 or 9. She's already like a bit mature for her age, and some children just are. But I feel like with her in particular, she actually does mature.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even if you want to say like, okay, I was turned into a vampire at the age of 16, so I'm always going to be mentally a 16-year-old and I'm not going to mature after a couple hundred years, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's a point where you're going to learn things and grow as a person regardless. So I don't know. I don't know how realistic that is in any sense. And who knows if Holly's even entirely right about that, or if that's just how she feels because she is kind of stuck in a situation where she's been living with this asshole abuser for 30 years.
That's true.
So
very true.
She hasn't had a chance to get out there and live her life, because Ida and Rose were turned very young too, and they seem very like, you know, maybe they have matured a bit. So who knows? Right. Maybe it's just Holly thinking that that's how it works. And maybe in like 20, 30 years, she'll feel differently.
Right. So then we have the process of making a vampire is painful for both the maker and the fledgling. And I thought this was an excellent motivator to keep your fledglings limited. Like, this is not an erotic Ricean process. It's a painful and soul wrenching to turn a human into a vampire. For both parties involved. So I thought that was very unique.
I don't know if it's unique. I think it's pretty painful and awful in a lot of vampire lore.
I don't know. I guess just the way Holly described it, it was...
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's not a fun process.
Mm-mm.
And then just like a handful of little things. Vampires in this world have reflections. They don't need to be invited in. They can't be killed with stakes, as Stacy learned painfully and awfully.
Poor Stacy.
And they do kill to survive and drink human blood.
And then we have, most humans are naturally repelled from vampires because they represent death. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's a choice and I respect it, but I am not personally a subscriber of this. This was more of a it served the world, not the plot kind of addition, which is fine. I think it makes sense for humans to feel repelled from a lizard brain, like there is an apex predator in my presence sense, more than a fear of death sense, but I don't. That's just me.
Yeah, I feel like humans being repelled away from vampires, so maybe they don't want to go out in the day as much and spend time around humans because humans naturally like gravitate away from them because they represent a sense of death and something otherworldly. Like, I think it's a cool idea. I agree with you. I think the idea that people are just like lizard brain, oh my gosh, apex predator, there's something unnatural about you is probably part of it too. And I think this is partially there to kind of explain why vampires don't really go out in the day, since they can. Because if they could go out in the day and just be around people and having it be fine, that would be weird. And then also they don't have a lot of mortal friends and stuff, because most mortals are kind of repelled by them. Parker notably is not repelled by Holly, which is nice and part of why they have a connection.
Parker is herself strange and unusual.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, like to me, that would be me. Like, that would make sense. Like, it's like, oh god, there's an apex predator. It's like if there's a lion in my presence, like I need to get away from it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that to me is a response that I could believe more than like death is upon me, you know?
It's like
the way it's presented is much more like esoteric and woo-woo and not at all like logistical, like I actually think it should be.
Yeah,
but that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a fair quibble. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. So then we have heirlooms which possess the vampire's humanity. I think this is unique and something I wasn't sure was going to go a certain way. Like, I thought the book was going to pull a switcheroo on us and all the girls wound up mortal again. Hurrah! You know, like I didn't know what was going to happen. You know,
right. No, and I'm glad it didn't go that way, because that would have been a bummer, because I feel like for a long time, there was this trend kind of post-Twilight of vampire books where it was all about how being a vampire was gross and disgusting and like you have to kill people and it's, you know, you can't see the sun, which obviously isn't the problem here. But like it was very much like these are otherworldly monsters. And I think it was, which is true, they are otherworldly monsters. It is kind of weird and gross and awful. And like I find that really compelling though. So when all those books came out that were kind of like the Twilight backlash of like, no, actually vampires aren't sparkly. They're these horrifying creatures and being a vampire is gross and who would want to be a vampire? I was just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Like, me? I would want to be a vampire. So I appreciate that trend has sort of calmed down and we are no longer agonizing over how being a vampire is like the worst thing in the world. And like, and so I'm glad that this book didn't fall into that, like, oh, but we get to be human again kind of thing. Like, no, we get to be immortal vampires. And that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think I would have been really disappointed had they reverted back to their mortal selves.
Yeah, I think that would have been a bummer ending for sure.
Yeah. I'd have been like, what the fuck? Yeah, that's why I don't like the adaptation of The Little Vampire, like the film. Like, I own it and it's cute and everything, except that the goal is to, like, for them to go back to being human. And
they do. Yeah.
And I'm like, you guys suck. Because in the books, like, they love being vampires.
Yeah, I can't relate.
Can't relate. Sorry.
I wrote an entire trilogy about a vampire who gets turned human and is freaking pissed about it. So I clearly have a thing about that. I'm definitely like not on team human over here. So yeah, I'm the wrong person for that kind of story.
Yeah, I am not that audience.
Mm-mm. And then we learn that vampires can regrow entire limbs if lost or torn off, which is cool. I dig that. I do not dig how it happens in this story because they grow back in like 2 minutes. And I'm like, that is ridiculous. Not a fan.
Yeah, for being a pretty short read, this book can get pretty damn gory. But the limb tearing almost got to a goofy level.
Almost? Like, almost? No, okay. It was
definitely goofy.
Like they're like tearing off arms and then like, oh, his arms are already back. He's already, and it's like, what? Come on. Like, at least make it take a night or something. Come on.
Yeah, I saw it as comical by the end of the book. Like, I'm sure if that was the intended effect. But if this ever got turned into a film, I think it should be a super goofy, gory, campy film.
Yeah. Oh, yes. This should be a campy vampire movie. Mm-hmm. 100%. And then the other thing is that vampires have to remain in close proximity to their makers, which causes them physical pain and like headaches and stuff. Like they can't focus, they can't do anything, they have to follow. So if I turned Chell into a vampire and I decided I wanted to go live in Washington, D.C., she would be stuck going to Washington, D.C. She would not have a choice. I wouldn't do that to you, by the way. I'm just saying.
That's okay. I mean, I like D.C. I don't like the cold, you know, just I can rob people because, man, it's expensive there.
I know. And also just like the humidity. Oof. I do like how this creates like natural vampire population control, though, because A, most vampires who realize this are probably super selective about turning others because it means you can never really shake them. So you've got to really make those choices carefully. Mm-hmm. Like pick people you really like because you are literally going to be stuck with them. It creates a lot of motive for your fledglings to kill you if they don't like you and they get tired of having to live in like bumblefuck Kansas because you've decided that's where you want to hang out for 100 years. So that's dangerous. And an area can only sustain so many vampires per square mile. So since you know any vampires you turn are going to have to hang out in the same area, you're probably not going to want to turn that many people as long as you're thinking on a practical level. Because the more you turn, the more people who are stuck in one area, and then the more people they turn, and it just becomes this whole thing. And I'm guessing that there is a lot of like killing the person who turned you. Like, I feel like that's very common in this world because it's the only way to truly be free, which puts you in a pretty dangerous position if you're ever going to make another vampire.
Yeah. I agree with everything you so eloquently laid out. I think one area authors often gloss over is vampire population control, and Sonya developed a simple yet really effective device to address this.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, God, in high school or something, there was some article I do not remember where it was, but it was very much like a vampires can't be real because they would have taken over the world by now. And they did some like math. And that vampire math was based on the idea that like vampires turn like in Salem's Lot, where it's like a disease that just spreads out. So it was assuming that and not assuming that making another vampire is like a choice.
That's so rare though, that disease one. Like that's that like contagion kind of thing. Like that's much more of a zombie thing. Like it's so rarely a vampire thing.
Especially now, especially after Anne Rice came in and blew up the genre and made it better. Like now it's very much like an active decision to make another vampire. Usually it's not usually just a, I bit you and you died and now we're overrun very quickly, because that does get out of hand very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
But this one just creates a whole nother level of problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have a wrap up. What did you like about this book overall?
I like that it's a fun, quick read. It's very fast paced. I do think some of the vampire lore is interesting, like the whole you have to be in close proximity to the one who turned to you. I think that's fascinating. I think that could go a lot of bad ways and a lot of interesting ways, so it's kind of fun. I think Ida is creepy with her human body part craft, so I enjoyed her. And also she's like the cranky one, and like everyone's like, Ida doesn't like anybody, and I'm like, yes, I relate to this person very much. And I like that the vampires are very inhuman and monstrous. Like they're just allowed to be vampires. They're allowed to kill. They're allowed to do human body part crafts if that's what they feel like doing. And it's not like this big angsty moral quandary issue. So I appreciate that.
Same. I thought this book was really fun. It hits a lot of my sweet spot favorite tropes, including reconciled best friends, budding sapphic love, sisterly support system, and vengeance. The lore is interesting enough to keep the vampires fresh, and the characters are unique enough to leave me curious about what they got up to after the book's conclusion.
Yeah, so. I was going to say this book is big fanfic bait, because it ends with Parker effectively having amnesia because Parker was just made a vampire that day.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And so she only remembers being a vampire, and she wrote a letter to herself that she likes Holly and should trust her but doesn't know her at all. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's some good potential for some fic about what happens afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they literally just like got into a van and drove away, that's just great, right? They just drove off. It's wonderful. It's like, all right, this is great, this is just ripe, you know, it's ripe for more adventures. What didn't work as well for you?
Again, the fight scenes were just too silly for me to take seriously. Like, they're just ripping off limbs and tearing off heads and everything's growing back in like a matter of seconds. And I'm just like, this is absurd and I cannot take this seriously at all. It's ridiculous.
Same. Although maybe action isn't Sonya Hertel's strong point. And so she just was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to lean really hard into this. I'm going to go balls to the wall, which I respect.
Yeah, totally. I also just the whole memory thing. I overthink things, as you know.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that.
But I started to think about the memory thing, and the problem with the whole, like, it cuts off when you become a vampire, so you'll forget all your mortal life. But then they were talking, like, Ida's going to forget her sister. But Ida thought about her sister a lot in her vampiric life. So I guess I'm overthinking how memory works. And, like, I don't think memory works that way, where you can cut it off and just have zero memory, especially about things that you have actively discussed and been thinking about for the last like 90 years or whatever it is. Like, you will have been thinking about that stuff.
To counter that, I mean, Stacy and Holly, I think, is a really good example, because they're like, or especially for Holly, because Holly's like, I know you are my best friend, but I don't know what that entailed for us before becoming a vampire, because her first memory of Stacy is now no longer when Stacy came to sit next to her in eighth grade. It was the like pretty much when she became a vampire, like it was her turning her.
But my argument to that is that she remembering when Stacy came and sat next to her in sixth grade as a vampire. She thought about that a lot. So how does that wipe away? Because you can't. So like,
I understand what you're saying, but I don't think memory works. Like, you can't You can't, like, memories of memories aren't going to be retained.
Okay, but I don't know. I feel like that is where I got lost in the weeds overthinking it, for sure. Okay. Because I was just like, if you can remember this stuff, and also you have video cameras, pull out your iPad and make some videos and tell yourself about stuff. Like, obviously, it's not the same as actually remembering it, but you could have, like, I mean, I know they write down in a notebook some of their stuff so they can read it, and obviously that's good, but, like, I don't know. I feel like they could have spent those 3 days waiting for the full moon, like, just making documentaries.
That's true, actually. That is actually something that I feel should have been done, like, where they videotaped themselves talking about their lives.
Yeah, I don't know. But again, I don't know how memory works. I'm not a scientist. I was just thinking, like, yeah, you can't quite wipe all that stuff away if you still know. And they do kind of address it, like you said, but I just still... it was one of those things that just made me, like, go, wait, what? How is this supposed to work? And, like,
and it also happens very abruptly towards the end. And so there's not really enough time to super explore it.
Yeah. So I think that was just one of my little quibbles, too, where I got hung up on it and was overthinking it. And I'm not sure I love that. But okay, there's got to be some kind of payment for killing your maker. Like, there has to be some kind of trade off. So I understand that.
So would you recommend this book, and to whom?
I would definitely recommend it to teens who are into vampires and want a lighter, fun vampire story. It's definitely a fun popcorn read about vampires. So if that's something you're looking for, I think this book is probably right up your alley.
Yeah, same. I plan to gift my copy of this book to my niece, who will be 16 in April. I think she'll really enjoy it, particularly the support system found within the girls and the queerness.
Mm-hmm. So would you have liked this book as a teen?
Oh, absolutely. I actually found myself a little sad that books like this were not around when I was a teenager. Vampires were almost exclusively centered around adult media, like existential romantic vampires and straight up horror, which is why I adore the Little Vampire series by Angela Summer Bodenberg so dearly, because it was, like, the only series I had as a kid that centered around kid vampires. But there was nothing in between, because I was just too old by the time teen vampires did become the thing to really bond with it, you know? But the fact that this book is sapphic and focuses a lot on female friendship, and as you said, they revel in the fact that they're vampires. Like, they're very unforgivingly vampires, you know? Like, they're not trying to apologize for it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is just a straight shot of serotonin straight to, like, my teenage brain. So I could have, like, this probably would have been my favorite book had this come out when I was, like, 13, 14. Oh my God. Would have loved it so much.
Oh, nice. That's a ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
I did, when I opened it up and she's, like, working at Taco Bell as a vampire, I'm like, this is amazing. I'm in. totally sold. I think as a teenager, I would have enjoyed it. You know, this is fun. Good read. I would have loved it, and I would have put it on the shelf and been done. Like, I don't think it would have been a favorite. But I definitely think I would have been into it, at least for as long as it took me to read it, for sure. I definitely would have been like, oh, this is cool. Not my favorite type of vampire lore, but it's a fun story for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any final thoughts?
I only have one. I personally like to see a campy, vampy film version of this. I think the text is straightforward enough that a very faithful adaptation can be made. So, hey, filmmakers, get on that.
Yeah, I would actually really enjoy seeing a movie version of this. I think it's really suited to a movie, and it has a very straightforward plot, too. It's there's not a lot going on. It's very much like, okay, we got to get these objects. Yeah. There's a little bit of heist involved, like bank heists. So they break into the bank and some grave robbery. And, like, I think it could be really fun, for sure.
Yeah.
It would be a good movie.
Just a heads up, then, for those of you who are thinking about getting the book, like the actual physical copy of the hardback, the font type is quite small, so if you are visually impaired in any way, you might want to go ahead and just get the Kindle version, so that way you can, I imagine, you can control the size a lot better. That would probably be the better option.
Yeah, that's... I think with the Kindle you can, like, adjust the font size a lot, so I think that's helpful.
Yeah, so I just want to give that heads up out there, because yeah, I did struggle quite a bit with that.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was like, what? I mean, I have a pretty severe, you know, prescription, but, like, I need every document to always be a minimum of font size 12. So
Well, look, it's a YA book. It's for young teenagers.
It's for young teenagers with their perfect eyesight. Not crones like me. Anyway.
Well, thank you for finding this book. I know you found it in a bookstore, I believe, which I was excited.
Yeah, it just was at an end cap at my local independent bookstore, Romans in Pasadena, California. Shout out. So it was also pretty inexpensive and like under $20. So support your local indie bookseller and grab it there.
Yeah, and I will link to the book on bookshop.org as well if you want to pick it up that way. It's not an affiliate link or anything. So it's just just a link to the book on an alternative to the Zon, even though I do buy Kindle books. I'm sorry. It's
fine.
Convenience. And
we also linked to Sonia Hartle's website in our show notes. So you can familiarize yourself with the author and check out any of her other books. She's got a couple that actually look fun.
Yeah, I checked out her set earlier. She does have some that look a little fun. I think there's one about like a video going viral or something. And I'm like, that would be a wild situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very glad that wasn't a possibility when we were in high school.
Yeah.
Oh.
Find us on social media and let us know if you have read The Lost Girls or what vampire book you've been reading lately. Tell us about it.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of our Vampire Book Club. If you do decide to pick up this book after listening to this episode, let us know and let us know what you think.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye. Hey, everyone, it's Tori. I'm just jumping on real quick because I wanted to let you know that we're going to be taking a couple weeks off for the holidays, but we will be back in January with new episodes. I hope you have a lovely holiday season and a happy new year.
This is Tori and Chell wishing you a fantabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
This podcast was edited by me, Tori. Our music is edited and mixed by Vikra the Never Living and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you really want to join our hellish crusade, please leave us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Be sure to tell your favorite blood-sucking fiends about vampires ruined my life.